Place to Be Nation. I know I sound like I have gone to a concert, maybe Motley Crue's The Dirt, and screamed way too loud, but this is Andrew Reese joining you guys for PTPN's NBA Team Podcast. Oh my God, I am already falling off the rails here. Adam Murray, help.
Oh, this is going to be a fun, fun, fun-filled episode.
Well, it is a fun-filled episode because there's actually, like, the stakes are being raised. We're now in the second round. We're in the Elite Eight.
Now we're down to good basketball.
We are down to good basketball.
We got rid of Detroit, thanks for playing. You know, Clippers, you gave it a shot. You scared Golden State for a game. But now all the bad teams are out. Now this is the East has matchups people are excited to see. The West is just like... Well, the West sort of knows, like, yeah, we know it's going to be Golden State, so who cares? But
there's a little bit of fluidity in the West, even though, like, Houston is – I mean, Houston got out to a 3-0 lead. You know, the one that really surprised me, you know, and we don't have to, like, touch too far on that because we want to move forward, is that I was surprised that Oklahoma City just did not put up the fight that I thought that they could against the Blazers. I thought the Blazers were going to kind of mentally fold – even if they were up big, and they just somehow didn't. And Damian Lillard made one of the most epic shots in NBA playoff history, like a 30 or 40-foot three-pointer to sink it against the Thunder, right in Paul George's face. Just unbelievable
it's
shot.
It's fine, because Paul George was right. That's a stupid shot. Why would you take it? There's no reason for it, but okay, he made it, so you're the hero. You got it, but what a stupid shot to take.
Correct.
Like, you dribble it down, you're 37 feet away, and that's what your shot you're going to take. You're not going to even try to run
a play. You know what I'd also say to Paul George? Well, don't play stupid for 5 games like the Thunder did.
Well, we're going to have a lot to talk about them when it comes to our Gone Fishing episodes, which will be – I always look forward to those.
Yeah, I mean, before we wave goodbye, I mean, it's like on the west side. West side? See what I did there? Anything from those first round series that you took away? Obviously, a lot of people immediately gravitated towards that 30-point lead being choked by the Mountain in the next 2 games. But like, was there anything in that Western Conference? But
there hasn't really been much anything intriguing because they've been predominantly just every game has been one sided.
You haven't enjoyed the Nuggets kind of slowly figuring out how to be good in the playoffs?
Well, isn't that what we said? You have a team with no experience against the savvy old veterans. So we had said Nuggets in 7. But, okay, since we're talking West first, let's just go to Golden State and Houston.
Okay.
Does Houston have any chance?
Yes, because James Harden is such a matchup nightmare for Klay Thompson.
Yeah, but the problem with Harden is usage. Harden's usage is 96%. So
yes.
He is, you know, what happened last year, the wheels fell off of him because he was ran too hard. What's happening again this year? He's doing the exact same thing. So he's scoring, but who else is really doing anything on that team that's exciting?
Well, that's a good point. Like, Paul is taking a little – I will say this. Chris Paul is still elite player. I mean, like, a terrific NBA point guard who – can do it all, great defender, gets to the foul line. He's terrific, okay? He has taken a step back compared to other years. I mean, like, let's call a spade a spade. I will say this. I think Eric Gordon has actually had one of his better years this year.
Yeah, he has, but is that going to – it's just Chris Paul, he's fading.
A little bit, yes.
This is the beginning of the end with him, and it's just Harden. So, okay, you let Harden score 50 – with Warriors, you're going to have everybody, you know, 3-4 people who can beat you. You need somebody on the Rockets other than Harden to do something. And is that going to be Paul? Do you expect, you know, Eric Gordon to do something?
Yeah.
Austin Rivers?
I was watching the Warriors play the Clippers in game 4 in Staples. And Curry had a bad game. He struggled the whole day. Klay Thompson scored like 30, like 27 or 30 points in the first half. Like, I don't know what you.
And the thing with the Warriors, as we mentioned, anybody could go off at any time. Klay Thompson could have a 30-point quarter. Steph Curry is going to go 7 for 10 from 3. Durant will always just hit everything as
The Capella role will be a problem for them. It was a problem for them last year. Now, a lot of people will immediately go to last year's matchup because, you know, that was a pretty epic 7-game Western Conference Finals and say, oh, well, we'll just be sort of a copy of what happened then. You know, the rosters are a little bit different, you know, and DeMarcus Cousins is out with a torn quad. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be no Cousins there. So there's the depth is a little bit less for Golden State, but Golden State's still very good defensively, which is going to, you know, they're going to try.
If you use Capella, your usage rate is going to, you have to slow everything down, which is not the Rocket style. And so it's counterproductive, essentially, and he'll just be there, you know, getting mop-up points.
And you don't want to turn it into a three-point shooting contest against Golden State. The problem is that's how the Rockets play. They like to pull vault, you know. That's just their game. So, but I will say this: their biggest advantage and the reason why I do give them not a healthy chance but a slight chance is that James Harden is such a nightmare for the Warriors' defensive game plan. He's the one riddle.
But yeah, we've said that. But this, the second round of the playoffs, time one person cannot pull it off anymore.
No. I mean, even when like people talk about like, well, LeBron did it when the Cavs beat the Warriors. Well, they also had Kyrie Irving, who was like unstoppable in the last three games. So that kind of helped.
You have Kyrie and you have Kevin Love, who's also a legitimate All-Star.
Yes, exactly.
You forget about those people. Whereas, okay, you got Harden and you know, PJ Tucker gonna.
There are things about the Warriors that worry me. Like, I think Sean Livingston has fallen off a cliff. Andre Iguodala still has a little bit of juice left in him.
But he's 35, and the juice is slowly.
But he still has that intangible touch. I have not seen a lot of Quinn Cook, which gives me the feeling that they're way overplaying Curry because they just don't feel enough confidence in their backup guards. And you know, like I saw a couple of them where who was the one? Alphonso McKinney, right? Like where they have to relieve Iguodala, so McKinney has to go out there and play the wing. That's a giant red flag in terms of your bench issues. Whereas the Rockets, you know, you mentioned Tucker, but you know they got guys like you know Austin Rivers. They've got
Austin Reed, Kenneth Faried, Gerald Green.
You know Gerald Green. I'm not sure what's going on with Iman Shumpert. Are you sure? I don't really see him play much.
No, I think he hasn't done anything.
Correct.
And then the it's ghost of Carmelo Anthony.
But it also might be a matchup deal with Utah where he just didn't work with, you know, the fact that Utah kind of plays a lot more bigs. So they just didn't have room for Shumpert on the small lineup. So maybe they'll play him more against the Warriors where you're going to be having to attack a very versatile, switchable type of defensive lineup. And, you know, they might have to get a little creative with those roles with Capella. Instead of Harden hitting them on that, you might want to have, you know, Paul do the pocket pass and then have
Harden will not agree to that.
I'm trying to make it easier for the Rockets, Adam. I mean, you got to do a little bit of diversifying on the offensive end for the Warriors because their defense is too smart, especially with Draymond Green patrolling. So, let's kind of like wrap a bow on that with the Warriors and the Rockets. Like, what do you see there?
Warriors in five.
I have the Warriors probably I'll just go ahead and say six games. I think the Warriors will win the first two and then the Rockets will win the next two and then eventually the Warriors will win in Houston in game six to finish it off. I just don't have super confidence in the Warriors right now. They kind of worry me. Do they worry you at all?
No, they just seem like they're waiting for this.
I mean, Durant, I will say this about Durant. He took a lot of crap for that game two collapse because it wasn't even that he played badly. He shot 5 for 8. It was just that he wasn't engaged. And that was a criticism he got with the Thunder. And he came out in the next two games in LA and just destroyed the Clippers. So.
Well, that's not hard since nobody, you know, I could have, what, Gallinari on him.
Yeah.
You know, there's not much you can. That's the matchup nightmare for that. Well, not for most teams, he's a matchup nightmare. But, you know, that one wasn't hard to be like, okay, you want me engaged? Okay, here. Now, bam. Done.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, Warriors in six, you say five. And we can move on to the next one, which actually is fairly interesting because they're both like by far the youngest teams remaining in the playoffs at this point. The Portland Trail Blazers and the Denver Nuggets. Doesn't that even feel weird to talk about in the second round of the playoffs?
It is very strange indeed. And then you're just like, well, it'll be Damian Lillard or Nikola Jokic, like, what, huh? They're one of those people's gonna be the finals.
Now, you know, for Dame, there is a point where it's like, all right, you got to stop hating on this guy. I mean, he's sitting here dropping 40-foot bombs, winning playoff series, second time he's done it in his career. Ironically, you know, the last time it was in the first round too. But this time, I mean, it seemed like the Portland Trailblazers gained a lot of confidence when they went up against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, they were really just giving them the business down the stretch. That game five clincher was very, very close, obviously, but didn't it feel a little bit like the Blazers sort of took a step forward, especially after that horrific disappointment against the Pelicans last year?
No, not really. It just seems that, I want to say, Oklahoma City just took two steps back.
So you think it was a relegation that caused Portland to move on? That's not a good sign for them as they go up against Denver.
Portland has the same team, with the exception of Kanter being the injury replacement for Nurkic, but the team was built and has no salary cap space because of this was the plan to have the exact same team. So what are they doing differently? Nothing really. They are who they are. Oklahoma City just sort of sunk their way out.
Mm-hmm. You know, the irony too with the Nuggets is that they don't play fast. They're like one of the slowest teams in the league, because when you have a point forward like that, or a point center, if you want to call it, in Jokic, it kind of makes sense. You don't want to try to rush too many of those shots. You want sort of that North Carolina secondary break where Jokic can make a second or third decision off of a ball fake or something, and then go to work. But the key too in that series against San Antonio was that Jamal Murray, who is also playing in his first series, a lot of Nuggets are playing in their first series, he struggled to start against the Spurs. Derek White was sort of giving him problems. And then Murray came along late. And that was sort of – and when they were starting to do the give and go between Jokic and Murray, that started feeding some of the other guys like Torrey Craig and Will Barton and Paul Millsap, who's obviously a playoff veteran. Like, they started to kind of feed off of that. Do you feel like there's some kind of – what do you think is the on switch for the Nuggets? Like, at what point do you watch them and say, okay, now they're on a roll?
I don't – this Nuggets team is a hard team to figure out because –
A lot of people pointed at Torrey Craig going into the lineup against the Spurs as a tactical thing. But that can obviously change.
There's not one guy who's turning it on. It's just all like, we don't know who's going to be the guy that's going to be a hot this game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very strange because he's like, oh, there's like, you know, the first game we talked about, oh, there's Harden. It's going to be him. Oh, it's going to be Lillard and McCollum here. It's like, well, I don't know. Could it be Craig? Could it be Murray? Is Jokic going to go for a triple-double? I have no clue what's going to happen.
And depth here is huge on both sides. Like, I don't know how necessarily you would define the Portland Trail Blazers, especially after the Nurkic injury, but they do have some pieces they can throw at you. You know, Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless, they've been there for a while, but they're very used to what they need to do. Seth Curry played a lot in that series. I haven't seen a lot of Evan Turner, but Zach Collins has been a good secondary center for them in that
series. Evan Turner has been – he's been getting like 8 or 10 minutes. His minutes have gone way down, which is not what they brought him in for.
But they still have that afterburner. Just say, for example, they have to like dip in. They got to go like get Scalabissier or Anthony Simons or Rodney Hood. Like, they can do that, you know?
Yeah, they have Rodney Hood, but they don't think Scalabissier is playing or doing anything.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is, like, if they ever had to, you know, break, you know, like, almost like, remember when the Celtics, with all their rash of injuries, they had to use Semi Ojeleye. You know, sometimes you never know what's going to happen.
Well, so it's an Abdul Nader sighting. What? How?
Exactly. And with the Nuggets, you know, that kind of felt like the case with Torrey Craig. But they got a lot of guys. Malik Beasley has been a very good player for them, and he's been contributing in that. He contributed well in the San Antonio series. You know, Gary Harris starts, obviously. Juancho Hernan Gomez, he doesn't really play much right now. But
nope, he's out of the rotation.
Yeah, but like I said, you don't know. Like, this is very fresh. This is all new for Denver and Mike Malone. You know, they might just mix it up, and you don't even see it coming.
So who do you have?
I would take the Nuggets in seven games. I think it would go seven games. I think for the Nuggets, their offense is just a little bit better than the Blazers.
I probably might have to go with the Blazers in seven, only because of that experience factor. As much as they get swept out in the first round, all these guys have the experience, whereas Denver is still sort of figuring it out as they go.
Who would guard Lillard?
Murray.
I mean, that's a tough call. That's a tough ask for Murray. He's solid defensively, but he's not great. McCollum, I mean, Gary Harris would probably guard McCollum.
So then Murray would have to guard Lillard.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough ask, like I just said. But, you know, and the only other thing that you could think of is have Malik Beasley and do it by committee. You know, try to pull, like, a lot of double teams and just try to force Cantor to kill you on the roll. That would be the only thing I can think of.
Okay, and then, you know, the flip side, is Cantor going to stop Jokic now?
Cantor was actually quite successful against Steven Adams.
Because they practiced against each other. He knew his game.
Oh, stop that shit with the Stash Brothers. Like, I don't want to hear that one. I think Cantor actually played really well. I'm trying to be the one champion for Enes Kanter.
But he's not a terrible player. People, like, make him act like, maybe make it sound like he's not good at all.
He's a fantastic scoring big. That's what he is.
Yeah.
He's like Jimmy Jackson. Like, Jimmy Jackson was a terrific scoring wing in the NBA. The problem is he never found a landing spot. He would just go from team to team to team. Kanter is almost the same way now. You know, he just has to find a freaking home. Which one did you say was going to match up with him, Jokic or Millsap?
Millsap, he's taken a backseat in the first round, I think.
Yeah, but it sort of makes sense in this case. You want to have the other guys lead the way while Millsap is sort of the background leader. It actually makes sense. With Jokic, yeah, that's going to be extremely hard, especially if he gets any kind of ball screens or, you know, Jokic is just getting the first step on Cantor. We know defensively he struggles. Imagine if Jokic is able to just see through him and pass all over the place like he always does in the middle of the court. That's going to be a nightmare for the Blazers.
Well, we shall see. You said Denver in seven. I said Blazers in seven. This is one of the times I think we were disagreeing.
Yep.
So let's go do some ads.
So.
All right, you ready to do it?
Yeah. So do you want to just go ahead with that, or with the read?
Why, you can show a little more enthusiasm for it.
Okay.
Look, it's been a busy week here at the Pop Feed. Lots of stuff is going on. Stuff's going down.
Like what?
Like Russell and Sam dish about the classic Empire Records. What did you think of Empire Records?
I liked it. I liked the Jim Blossom song. There's a great Jim Blossom song in there.
I'll find out about you.
No. Till I hear it from you.
I was close enough.
How did you screw that one up? I thought you were the 90s music guy. What else we got?
That is on a new 90s to nothing. This month in Talkin' Pop, Jenny and Tim welcome JT Rosero. Sounds familiar.
Oh, okay.
To relive the magic of WrestleMania weekend.
Oh, yeah. It was some fun stuff. I wasn't there, though. Not this year.
Nope. Ben Morris and Russell Stellers are still in 1970 talking about that wonderful year.
Well,
Marvel Age masterclass.
Well, they do know their comics. I'll tell you that right now.
Todd Weber and Tim Capel look at Uncanny X-Men number 136 and more in this latest episode of Conversation Comics.
Is that Dark Phoenix?
Hard Traveling Fanboys review Shazam. Cowboy and D'Amato are back this week in sports for the catch-up everything since the Super Bowl. A lot to get through.
Wait, that's what I was about to say. Like, everything since the Super Bowl. Since the Super Bowl, like, the, you know, I've had, like, a midlife crisis. You know? So, yeah.
And I don't know about that one. Todd and JT into Binge Please. They talk about the Netflix Marvel Universe and Daredevil Season 1. Lots of Marvel in this week, apparently.
I wonder why. I don't think there's a lot going on with Marvel this week, huh? Nothing coming out soon, huh? No.
Can you believe that's 3 hours long?
Yeah, I can. I actually can believe it. What I don't buy into is the early word that it's like, it's epic, it's the greatest, you know. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I thought Infinity War was just okay. Just
well, because
okay.
It was half.
I sound like the DirecTV thing. Just okay, you know. But like, it was good. It was really like frantic and weird and chaotic. It's like the Empire Strikes Back of the Marvel superhero universe. But like, it was just kind of weird. Well, I mean, Endgame is like supposedly. I mean, it's like it's the grand finale.
And I think that's what is people mean is there's nothing, twist, just. Oh, yes, and Todd has joined Andy to talk Swingers in the third episode of Laugh in Theater.
Swingers is a great movie. The Gretzky's bleeding scene is, like, one of my favorites ever. And then when he's trying to come on to Heather Graham at the club. Yeah, have you ever seen Swingers?
No, I haven't, but we're going to call this episode, our live read is longer than the episode itself.
Well, that's good content. You know, there's a
lot
of stuff.
Right. There's stuff there to watch. Go check it out. Now, back to the show.
And that was some fun stuff, but now we're going to get to the fun basketball stuff, Adam. Are you ready for the Eastern Conference semifinals?
Let's do it.
And I do not mean that in a sarcastic, condescending way. This is actually an exciting Eastern Conference semifinals. Do you agree?
They are both entertaining matchups, if for once.
You know,
it's not just who is Cleveland going to beat.
Well, I know that last year some people thought, you know, Toronto might have a chance against Cleveland. Then they got swept. And the only thing that was disappointing last year was that, you know, Boston played Philadelphia last year. And it just did not go the way that people wanted to go. People wanted something epic, and then the Celtics were up 3-0. And it was almost like – it was kind of the same feeling that you see with a lot of those series when it gets to 3-0 and you're like, oh my God, I put all the hype into this for nothing. Like, I'm not necessarily saying it's going to happen with these two series. In fact, I would probably put money on it. It's not. But there's going to be a lot – I mean, there's a lot to prove. I mean, I could make this argument. Maybe this is a hot take and you can disagree with me. Four of the five best teams in the NBA – are in this bracket in the Eastern Conference.
It's tough because,
like, would you put any of those secondary West teams, like, you know, the Rockets or the Blazers, like, would you put them in there above the Celtics or the Sixers or the Raptors or who's the fourth team I'm forgetting? The Bucks. Everyone's forgetting about the Bucks.
They're all about the same.
Mm-hmm.
I would put Denver and Portland on there. Houston is just Boston South because we don't know what Houston could do either.
Yeah, but Boston is so much better of a defensive team.
But Houston went all in this year, don't forget.
Mm-hmm.
Carmelo Anthony was supposed to be the missing piece, and they kept trading, and then we're going to buy in more and just keep buying and buying. They're all in this year, but the team has just been, you know, a mysterious fourth-place finish.
Okay, well, let's hit this. I want to start with the Raptors and the Sixers. Now, they had kind of similar – they have very, very similar wavelengths on their first-round series. First game, home drop. You know, just a weird loss that nobody could really explain well. And then they just sort of just rattled off four in a row without a problem. Now, the setup of the teams are so different. You know, offensively, the Sixers are one of the better ones in the league. And they kind of rely on their starting five for the most part, which is, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, J.J. Redick, and Jimmy Butler. And then the bench is just – it's just a trough. They don't really have much. Like, they were at a point in some of those games against Brooklyn that they won where they needed big shots from guys like James Ennis and Mike Scott. Now, I'm not trying to, like, disparage those guys, but it's James Ennis and Mike Scott, okay?
They've gutted outside McConnell.
Completely. With the Raptors, you know, they did get dinged by losing Anunoby to injury, but – yeah, I mean, you're talking about a team that defensively, their versatility is through the freaking roof. Like, that was the reason why they were able to just turn around so quickly on Orlando. Orlando couldn't freaking score against them.
Well, when you have
Serge Ibaka.
You have Serge Ibaka or Marc Gasol coming off the bench.
And Marc Gasol is almost like, which is funny because he played with him in Memphis. He's like the big Tony Allen. He just comes in and they sick him on the best big that the other team has. Like, he did that to Nikola Vucevic and gave him basically the flu, you know?
So Embiid's going to have a tough time because Embiid's going to have to play 40 minutes, whereas you
have to double Embiid. Like, you can – I don't think him with Gasol just doing just straight up – you know, defense for defense type of thing. I don't think that can work with Embiid. I think he's too good of a player. You're going to have to mix him up against, like, even Siakam, who has been unbelievable. Like, throw some compliments over at Pascal Siakam.
The most improved player of the year, I believe. I called it.
The game three when he scored 30 points and had 11 rebounds was one of the best games I've seen from any player this year. It might be the best playoff performance I've seen so far, other than Lillard's like soul-crushing performance against the Thunder.
It's just bizarre, like where it came from this year.
Well, this year, yes. Now, going into the playoffs, I was thinking, yeah, he can do this. But you lose that game one, and you're like, oh, Kyle Lowry had another bad game. Here we go again. Kawhi Leonard's going to have to turn around the bad mojo, and. Not only was Kawhi really good in those later games in the series, but Siakam was terrific too.
Yeah, and Kyle Lowry was just there.
You got Danny Green, you got Fred VanVleet, you got Norman Powell who's playing well offensively. I mean, that's a deep team, and you're going to throw that at Philadelphia. It's just a really good clash because they're just very different teams.
That's the sort of the thing is they are different teams, and. I want to say that the home court event is going to come into play.
Okay, that's Toronto. It's going to be in Toronto on Saturday.
Yes. Yeah, well, obviously, since the number two seed, they will have home court advantage, yes. But
in this case, yes.
I think as much as Philly has just gutted to have this team, it's just Tobias Harris and Butler and... they're all just going to be worn out by the end of it, I think.
Does Butler guard Kawhi?
No, I think you have to have Tobias on him.
Tobias defensively is going to get killed by Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard was like in the top five in the NBA in scoring, Adam. He was a killer. You can't just let him score 30 points.
Yeah, but you think J.J. Redick's going to guard anybody?
Well, J.J. is going to be on probably Kyle Lowry. No, seriously, what they're going to probably have to do is they're going to have to get really creative and have like Ben Simmons go in there and mix up with Kawhi, and then Ben Simmons will probably have to cover Kyle Lowry when Kawhi's on the bench. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing about the setup with the Sixers and why it's sort of it's sort of smoke and mirrors is that they don't really have like that one great go-to guard, but you have a great go-to forward in Ben Simmons. You know, it's kind of similar to the Nuggets with Jokic. You know, it's almost like a trick. You're looking at one hand while the other's doing something else.
Yeah, it's the thing. It's like, oh well, it's such a mismatch being a, you know, what is he, 6'10" or 6'9"?
Mm-hmm.
Being a 6'9" point forward, it's amazing. But okay, yeah. he needs to play defense. Who's going to guard the 6'2" guy?
Yeah, and as in terms of scoring margin and fast break. Like and pace, like the Raptors can go tit for tat with pretty much any of those fast teams. And I don't necessarily want to call the Sixers like super fast, but they're one of those teams that can score in a hurry on you. I mean, we saw that a couple of times where they can just go blast off offensively. Turnovers obviously are still an issue for the Raptors, not the Raptors, the Sixers. And you just don't want, you know, Kawhi and that defensive minded Raptors team to just get a bunch of runouts on turnovers. So that's going to be the biggest thing to look at in terms of a team stat perspective for this series is probably one of the bigger things. In terms of the superstars, it's really fun to look at because there's a lot of really good players there.
Oh, it's a big name series, but mm-hmm. I think what you sort of hit point, like you're going to have to see more McConnell out there.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to just, in case, you know, Toronto wants to try to run smaller,
but
put a couple of extra guards out there.
If they do that, they're going to throw out Fred VanVleet, and VanVleet's going to kill him.
And that's the X's versus the O's game that they get paid millions of dollars for, and we just sit here.
Well, it's also Brett Brown versus Nick Nurse. Now, listen, I'm not trying to disparage those two, but They're not, I mean, they're not, they don't have the type of experience. Nick Nurse, this is his first year. Brett Brown, when they got to the playoffs last year, people couldn't even believe that he was coaching them, you know?
Brett Brown, I do not think he is that great of a coach.
Okay.
Or a player or development as...
And Nurse was the guy who just happened to be holding the clipboard when Kawhi Leonard got there. So
basically, and it was, you know, the team didn't change that much. It was just, okay, we need somebody with fresh ideas, but we don't want to reinvent the wheel. Okay, we'll just take the assistant. Okay, yeah. Makes sense.
But let's go with predictions here.
I will start off then.
Okay.
I will go Toronto in 7. That's why I said it's going to come down to the games. It's going to be a slob, you know, a knockdown, drag out, slobber knocker, and they're just going to be gassed by the end of it.
Toronto in 5. I think the turnovers are going to kill the Sixers.
And that comes down to fundamentals, mm-hmm. which comes down to coaching.
Well, that's what killed them against the Sixers last year. Not the Sixers, the Celtics. And I think it might happen again. So, but man, that starting lineup of the Sixers, I mean, when they get going, holy crap, they can blow you out. So the Raptors, that, you know, they just cannot have slow starts. Slow starts might really do them in, especially when they're on the road. The next one is going to be, actually, I would consider this sort of like the main event of the whole second round, because a lot of people would consider this the two best teams in the East, period. The team that everybody was presumed to be the next one in line to win the East after LeBron left, and the one that actually wound up metrically being the best team in the East, maybe the best team in the league, the Bucks versus the Celtics.
Giannis, most improved player. I called it
Giannis, most improved player.
He could be like,
no, he's the
leap
he's
he took.
He's the most valuable player, Adam.
I think you could be both.
Oh hell no! Like, is that, are you talking about like when in the 80s when Michael won Defensive Player of the Year and MVP? They're like, just give him all the awards.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just, he is just something. It's just something else.
Oh, he's amazing. What did you see that was different from the Budenholzer? But obviously, other than, wow, they have a lot more talent this time with guys like Nikola Jokic, like Nikola Mirotic and people like that coming off the bench when they played against the Pistons. What was different when you watched them sweep the Pistons?
Well, you could say, well, they got Brook Lopez and they got Mirotic and they got the corpse of Pau Gasol. But what it comes down to is they had a coach.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't Jason Kidd going, okay, you guys just go out there and run around, play what position, whatever position you want. You want to be a point guard, you could be a point guard. You want to be a center, we could be a center. Wait, who cares? You're all the same.
But we're going to be taking threes, and you better make them.
Yeah, there was no definitive anything and no changing. And when you bring in a real coach who has real spacing and real passing and a real scheme, it's I had told at the beginning of the year, I'm like, Milwaukee is going to be a very dangerous team, and nobody's seeing it.
Yeah.
And then I just had to say I was right on that.
I thought I called that one. But anyways, the other thing too is, like, it's a little bit of a revenge factor. The Bucks played the Celtics in 7 games last year in the first round, and the Celtics got through. That was sort of the harbinger for bringing in Budenholzer, because the Bucks, you could tell the talent was there, but they needed someone to guide them, and they've really got, I mean, Milwaukee really went over the top in terms of how good they could be. In fact, I'd probably say the Bucks overachieved, whereas some people feel like the Boston Celtics underachieved. Would you agree with that?
The Boston Celtics did underachieve.
In the regular season.
Yeah, but then they're saying, like, maybe that's a Golden State thing, and just, they were just completely disinterested.
Then
and then, waiting for
then
the
how
playoffs.
Did they completely put the squeeze on the Indiana Pacers in 4 games?
I think, really, it's the absence of Marcus Smart.
It felt to me, watching those games, Adam, like the Pacers were never going to score.
There was nobody to pick him up. And with Oladipo, if he were there, it would be a completely different game. But I think the rotation had shrunk just enough
mm-hmm.
to the point where everybody has their
minutes. Due to the Marcus Smart injury.
Yes.
Yes.
And if he was there, the numbers would be sort of messed up again, and people would be off. And also Hayward having some resemblance of who he used to be.
He was very good in the 4th game against Indiana, you know, where he kind of looked like he had that bit of a flash to him, you know, when he was in Utah. you know, defensively, the Celtics, they weren't as strong as they were in terms of their rating because, like we talked about, they sort of slacked in the regular season. But, man, they were so good. The only problem is, guess who's first in defensive rating? The Bucks are. So, I mean, the Bucks are like tops in like so many things, like scoring margin and made threes and rebounding. And that's one of the one things that under Jason Kidd, like the Bucks were renowned for being awful at was rebounding the ball. Now they're tops. So what do the Celtics do?
They have the experience.
They do. And they also have the horses. You know, you got a Marcus Morris here. You got a Terry Rozier there. You got a Semi Ojeleye here. You know, we might even see Marcus Smart back in the middle of the series. We're not absolutely sure yet. So it's going to be really interesting. The depth is something that's not going to bother the Celtics. And I don't think the Bucks are that worried about it either on Boston's side. Because, you know, they got – like you mentioned, Lopez. You got Ersan Ilyasova. Pat Connaughton is a guy that comes in and gives them some decent wing help.
Because there's no DiVincenzo and no Brogdon.
Well, not only that, Tony Snell is sort of becoming relegated, so now they kind of split between Snell and Connaughton, you know, for like leak outs and steals and stuff. You know, Budenholzer's weird. He did this with DJ Wilson, where he was just on a DJ Wilson kick for like 2 months, you know. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it all comes down to Antetokounmpo. But here's the funny part. There was a game against the Pistons where Antetokounmpo was in foul trouble, and they were just bombing threes on him without Antetokounmpo out there.
Yeah, but they were hot.
Yeah.
Don't expect it always to happen. And plus, it's Detroit.
And it was against Detroit, correct. I was about to say.
It was a glorified practice, more or less.
Who guards Jason Tatum?
You put Giannis on him.
Giannis. I would really just, if I wanted to really throw a blowtorch to it all, I put Giannis on Kyrie Irving, and see how that fucks up the offense of the Celtics. What do you think of that?
Then you just pass to Tatum.
Well, or what will happen is that Irving will do that kind of slip move, and then he'll give it to Horford, and then they'll go slow down ball, and Horford will play point center, which he did very well last year. And then you're going to have to move Antetokounmpo back onto Horford, and now you're playing inside out.
And then the Bucks have lost with that.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
It's going to be, you know, we talked some X's and O's here, which is fun. So there's a lot of stuff here, but we need a winner here. We can't just keep playing in the conference semifinals forever. So who wins?
I don't want to pick them, and I have gone against them many times, but I guess I have to say Boston in seven.
I'll pick the Bucks in seven.
I think the Bucks will probably win, but just the Boston part, I can't allow that.
The metrics are just, I hate to be that nerd, but the metrics are telling me the Bucks are the best team in the NBA. They would really have to just not play well to lose.
Yeah, I agree, but
they're playing a hell of a team.
My Celticsness will not allow me to pick it as much as I want to.
Well, I will say this. This is the series I've been looking forward to the most. I really do want to see Golden State play Houston again. That's probably number two for me, you know? And Philadelphia, Toronto is right behind it.
Yeah. Well, again, we're in the semifinals. All the games are good.
Yeah.
So. And you could say what you went about Portland. Like, Portland. But since Lillard hit the shot, people want to watch them now all of a sudden.
Yes.
So even that matchup will be fun to watch.
It's a destiny, yeah. That kind of
thing. We have the basketball we wanted.
Yeah.
We've been waiting for. We've gone through these for 2 weeks. It's like, okay.
It doesn't feel like a death march. That's the fun part, you know? And I mean, maybe we should just not invite LeBron to the playoffs anymore ever again.
Oh, the Lakers can make that happen quite easily.
they're trying their damnedest. The only thing is with the East, the only thing that surprised me when I think about those teams is that it is a shame that two of them obviously are going to be out of there pretty soon. But I didn't expect those teams to strengthen as quickly as they did and load up like they did.
Well, a lot of teams went in this year with the void in Cleveland.
Especially the Bucks.
The Bucks stocked up, the 76ers stocked up, and Toronto stocked up. So it had been a lot of, yeah, we know it's Cleveland and Golden State again.
But the other thing, too, is that and this is why I bring it up, is that you watch some of these, you know, situations where you have that giant void, like when Shaq and Kobe's Lakers broke up, and you know the Suns emerged when D'Antoni was there, but you know it did feel like there was a little bit of a void when in the Eastern Conference when Michael Jordan retired and the Bulls broke up. That was a huge void. No, I mean, I could not even tell you how many teams wound up in the NBA Finals coming out of the Eastern Conference for like five consecutive years. There was like a different representative. In this one, you know, you weren't absolutely sure with LeBron now completely out of the East, that you kind of wondered, like, okay, are these teams going to kind of slip and fall and stumble their way through, or are they going to strengthen? And it felt like in that first round that they really strengthened.
Yep.
So that's the one positive sign. Like, we're looking at four damn good teams. I'm not looking at, oh, that's a really good team, but they're playing against this team with one really good player and a bunch of like sidekicks. Like, no, these are four very good teams, and two of them are going to have to go.
Which is sad to see, but it's good for the entertainment value.
That's life. That's the NBA. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Enjoy the playoffs, the second round.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Play Sweet Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySweetNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the PlayStation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaySweetNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaySweetNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaySweetNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.